The Lost Lover by Karen Swan, read by Leslie Harcourt. He goes long barefoot that waits for dead men's shoes. Old Scottish proverb. Prologue. 26th of October 1930. Casino de Paris. Flora sat on the slim perch, her legs reaching down in an elegant point as she swung back and forth, high above the stage. The jet beads of her bodysuit glimmered in the lights, the turquoise tail feathers behind her resplendent. This was her favourite of all the songs she performed, the closest in nature to the melancholy ballads of home, and she felt her voice soar effortlessly, high above the flute and first violin. If she were to close her eyes, she might almost be able to persuade herself that she was still in the green, blanketing grasslands of St. Kilda, where the sheep grazed beneath vaulted skies. She might hear the echoes of her girlhood friends, laughing in the byres. She might glimpse her parents walking to the tiny kirk as the pale sun set on another day. She might see her lover run up a frozen slope. But this was no eerie, stormy paradise. She was enclosed in a red velvet womb. The air was thick with perfume and smoke, taffetas ruffling as ladies stirred, gentlemen coughing in their starched shirts. Even in the darkness, Paris had its own signatures. She swung higher in the jewelled birdcage, a whimsical creature enchanting them all. From this vantage point above the lights, she could look out among the sea of faces and see every single pair of eyes trained upon her. She didn't need their applause. Their open-mouthed wonder told her she was a star. All the pain, loss, and heartbreak of the past months had led her here, and now Paris lay at her feet, vanquished. But the dream she had stepped into was not her dream. Her gaze swept lightly over the crowd like a chiffon scarf, falling suddenly upon a face she had never expected to see again. A man from her past, a lover from the mists, he walked inside her shadow, leaving footprints on her soul. He watched intently as she swung above him, a bird of paradise in a parliament of crows. But he sank from her sight into the white glare of the footlights, gone again by the time she re-emerged. Lost to her, he was the ghost she could not catch, just as she was the woman he could not save. Chapter 1. 8th of August 1929. Village Bay, St. Kilda. Flora swept the hearth, the stone floor cool against her hands and knees as she tipped the ashes into the bucket. Even from inside the cottage, she was well aware of the progress the visitors were making up the street. She could tell from the ripple of excited voices and shy laughter that the villagers were performing the roles that had become something of a ritual whenever a tourist ship dropped anchor in the bay. Mad Annie and Ma Peg knitting socks at a ferocious speed as they sat on their stools. Crabbit Mary stoically carding the wool with her signature frown. Donald McKinnon and Hamish Gillies hauling boulders as they made repairs to one of the ancient cleats. The younger men made a show of strutting about with coils of rope looped over their shoulders, hands stuffed in their pockets, as if they might leap down a cliff at any given moment, time and tides permitting. They would hope to be urged by the visiting captain to give his guests one of their renowned climbing exhibitions. Only the dogs moved with any unself-consciousness, but then they cared little for the coins that crossed palms for these small displays of St. Kildan life. It had been a successful summer in that regard, the fine weather and calm seas bringing in the rich and the curious by the dozen, and the islanders had built up a small cache of coins that could be used at some point on the neighbouring isles. Though there were no shops or commerce of any kind here, over on Lewis, Harris and North Uist, some 38 miles distant, there were markets, stores and farmers willing to trade, especially given that the landlord's factor was so intransigent on his punishing terms.
"Flora, quick now!"
her mother Christina said, rushing back into the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?